yourself a song to sing, and sing it till you're done. Yes, sing it hard and sing it well. Send the robber barons straight to hell. The greedy thieves who came around and ate the flesh of everything they found, whose crimes have gone unpunished now, walk the streets a-screaming now.
Greetings, all you 99 percenters. This is your host, Dr. Jack Rasmus. This is Alternative Visions. All right, the main discussion, economic, of the past week, of course, must be the House passage. Well, not the House passage, the House Ways and Means Committee, voting out the House Trump tax bill. Okay, House Trump tax bill, this is... further clarification, iteration of the Trump Goldman Sachs tax cut for the rich proposal. A few weeks ago and last week we talked about the bill, Trump tax bill, tax cut bill for the rich and their corporations, and how it was really developed by this very small group of ex-Goldman Sachs investment bankers who now run the Trump Economic Domestic Policy Team, Steve Mnuchin, Gary Cohn, right? Two ex-senior president, senior managers in Goldman Sachs, now running economic policy. And they're the ones who crafted this initial proposal by Trump. And, of course, then the Trump proposal has to go through Congress. It starts in the Ways and Means Committee in the House. And the House Ways and Means Committee finalized its version here on Thursday and sent it out of committee. Now it goes to the House, the full House of Representatives, next week for a vote. And we want to talk about that, quote, final version in the House here today, and it certainly will pass the House next week, no doubt, because the Republicans have such a majority in the House. Well, once it passes the House, then the Senate has to pass its version, and debate on that started here on Thursday as well in the House, and we'll review some of those initial provisions and changes that the Senate perceives. And then, of course, the Senate will do the same thing. It will take up a vote probably after Thanksgiving. And then the Senate bill and the House bill will have to be merged and a joint vote on one version will occur in December. So it looks like it's pretty much on track. It's going to happen. And the changes in the Senate bill aren't going to be that much significantly greater than the House, so it should probably pass some version before the end of the year. And this will be the latest iteration of decades-long tax cutting of corporate taxes and taxes on wealthy individuals, households, investors that's been going on since Ronald Reagan. You see, this is the essence, one of the key characteristics of neoliberal policy since Reagan on. It's cut taxes, particularly at the high end and for corporations, and then make up the difference in the hit on the government budget deficit and thus the debt, which is just the accumulation of deficits, make up the difference or try to by cutting social programs. In other words, use the deficits created by the tax cuts as an excuse to cut social programs. They get two bites of the apple that way. That's the essence of fiscal policy in the neoliberal era, tax cuts. And you cut spending in order to finance them. That's what Reagan attempted to do back in the early 1980s, achieved it to some extent, not as much as he hoped, but it was a significant shift in policy in the U.S. And that's why fiscal policy takes on austerity characteristic. Austerity means cuts. And that's necessary to fund the tax cuts. Now, the exception to this, of course, is defense spending, war spending. That doesn't get cut. That keeps getting increased, you see. And they pay for the war spending and the tax cuts by borrowing from abroad and from others, and borrowing from themselves, from the government, and it was borrowing the surplus from Social Security and federal pensions to help pay for the deficit. But the big borrowing by the government occurs selling treasury bonds, particularly increasingly to foreign investors and central banks, you see. That's what I call the twin deficits trick here under neoliberalism. Twin deficits means you run a massive trade deficit, which means dollars flow abroad into central banks, private banks, and investors, because if you're buying more imports than selling exports, you're going to have a trade deficit, and you're going to have a negative outflow of dollars, and then that's exacerbated by U.S. corporations taking their money abroad as well, foreign direct investment, and investing abroad as part of this offshoring trend since Reagan. And then the U.S. also spends a lot of money maintaining its 1,000 military bases around the world, so that's an outflow of dollars. So maintaining the bases and the military empire at the same time of corporations' foreign direct investment, plus the trade deficit, more imports than exports, all the dollars flow offshore. The trade deficit, in the great sense, finances the budget deficit. All the money is offshore, and the arrangement is with U.S. Global economic political hegemony with all the other countries, few exceptions, of course, Russia and China. The deal is, all the dollars flowing offshore, you guys got to recycle it back and buy our treasury bonds. You see, you finance this great deficit ever rising and chronic deficit for decades by the backflow of the dollars that come back to the U.S. Buying treasury bonds. And that enables the U.S. elites to continue funding their wars without raising taxes, you see. First time in the history of the U.S. that these Middle East wars for the last 16 years have not been financed, in part at least, by raising taxes. In fact, we've had the biggest tax cuts in our history at the same time. That's all because of the twin deficits, neoliberal trade scheme that goes on, finances it. Okay, so now we have another iteration of tax cutting at the top end going on under Trump here. It's just a continuation. It's a neoliberal policy, a continuation of tax cutting that's been going on since Reagan. Since 1981, Reagan's $752 billion cuts didn't all go through, but that's what he proposed. And the same thing has been continuing decade after decade under Clinton in 1997-98 and under George Bush, of course, 2001-04. $3.4 trillion, and then more tax cuts with Obama's recovery plan, $300 billion, and then Obama extends the Bush tax cuts for 2 years and then comes to an agreement in 2013 to extend them for another decade, costing $5 trillion. And then Trump runs on a program, and he wants to cut $5 trillion as well. And this bill is the reflection of his campaign promise of cutting taxes by $5 trillion. And we're going to see it comes very close to $5 trillion. If you read the press and listen to the talking heads, what you hear is, oh, this is going to cost $1.5 trillion. No, no. Mm-hmm. What we'll explain here is that this proposal is at least $4.5 trillion. The House version, $4.5 trillion, pretty close to Trump. Okay, so let's look at that. The first version that came out by the Goldman Sachsers, and by the way, you can read that article that I wrote on my blog, jackrasmus.com, and it's also on Counterpunch and ZNet and Global Research and other places if you want to go there. You know, the first tax cut proposal here was not clarified as to who pays for it, you see. It was clear that the wealthy and the corporations were going to get the big bite, but how are you going to pay for it? That's been part of the obfuscation here and the spin, the public spin. Oh, it's only a $1.5 trillion impact on the deficit and the budget and the national debt. Well, as I said, it's really $4.6 trillion at minimum, not $1.5 trillion, three times what they're admitting to. And I'll show you how. First of all, the corporate tax cuts, right? The corporate tax cuts, how much? Well, if you just look at the three biggie tax cuts, corporate tax cuts, $2.6 trillion. Now, that's not my number. That number is what was estimated by the Congressional Joint Committee on Taxation a few weeks ago. Okay, $2.6 trillion in just three corporate tax cuts. What are they? Well, reducing the top corporate rate. The House bill proposes to reduce the top corporate rate from 35% to 20%. 35 to 20%. All right, how much is that going to cost, according to the Joint Committee on Taxation? That alone cost $1.5 trillion. That's a $1.5 trillion tax cut, just reducing the top rates from 35 to 20%. Now, you'll hear a lot about, especially from that clown Paul Ryan, House Speaker, who has dedicated his entire career in Congress to cutting taxes on the rich. They say that the U.S. corporations pay the highest tax in the world, and they pay both on foreign profits and U.S. profits, and they're the only ones, U.S. multinational corporations, that pay, and it's the highest tax rate in the world. Well, that's just not true. That's a lie. That's the nominal rate, 35%. The effective rate, what they pay after all the loopholes, the multinational corporations pay 12.5%, studies have shown. 12.5% when they bothered to even pay it on their offshore cash hoards that they've been building up since 2005. Which now amount to, officially, $2.4 trillion held in cash and offshore subsidiaries. Now, that's what they admit, you see. That doesn't count, you know, what they're stuffing away in tax havens and shelters and so forth. Corporations do that as well as individuals do that. And we just had this big revelation called the Paradise Papers come out on how much and where all of these rich folks are stuffing their and tax avoiding, stuffing their cash and tax avoiding, from Queen Elizabeth on down, you know, to Madonna and Bono and all these other celebrities. They all play the same game. They stuff it, and the Paradise Papers reveal the favorite place, one of the favorite places for the European British elite in particular, that's, you know, Bermuda. But they're all over the world, you know, these tax havens, you know, Liechtenstein, the Germans pump it into Liechtenstein, a little country up there in the Alps, and the British also, and the French put in Isle of Man, and Cyprus is a favorite place for Russian oligarchs to park their money, and Vanuatu, a little island out there in the Pacific, ever hear of that one? Yeah. Vanuatu, and of course the Cayman Islands in the Caribbean are a favorite place. There's 27 of these special jurisdictions where they hide their money, and the IRS can't get at it because these are sovereign nations, and they play the game of not providing the information to the IRS. And the IRS has a rule, if they can't get the information after 2 years, they drop the case. Okay, so 35% down to 20%. 35% is not what they pay after the loopholes, and there's all kinds of loopholes. They pay about 12.5%. And there's a race to the bottom in terms of state income taxes in the U.S. Not all states have state income taxes, but some do. And there's a race to the bottom to cut those taxes. So in terms of adding the state income taxes on top of federal corporate tax, we're talking about corporate income tax here, you know, maybe another 3-4% at the most. And then, of course, what do they actually pay offshore to the countries they're hiding in? Well, they pay another 3%, 4% maybe at the most. You know, a good example is how the European Union now is going after the tech companies because they've been getting away with murder, paying no taxes, you know, hiding their money in Luxembourg and in Ireland and places like that. You know, it just shows you they're paying about 17-18% effective rate, U.S. corporations, not 35%. They're paying about half. Well, now we're going to cut that to 20% nominal rate on paper, you know, so their effective rate will be even less than the 17%. Okay? $1.5 trillion will be the cost of reducing this from 35% to 20% nominal rate. Okay, but that's only the first of three biggie corporate tax cuts in the House bill. What are the others? Well, the other is what's called pass-through income for non-corporate businesses. You see, not all businesses are corporations in the U.S. Only about 20% of the 9 million businesses in the U.S. are actually corporations. There's like 7-8 million who are what we call proprietorships or partnerships, or these special hybrid categories called S-corps and so forth, right? Limited liability companies, et cetera. Their income is not corporate profits. Their income is integrated with their other personal income. In other words, they file their proprietor non-corporate business revenue as part of their personal income, wage income, salary income, you know, whatever income they may have. They get melded. They're together. And, of course, they then would pay the 39.6% top personal income tax rate. That's the personal income tax top rate, 39.6%. Corporate's 35%. Okay. Well, the proposal in the House is to reduce the pass-through income for non-corporate businesses from 39.8 to 25%. Wow. That's $448 billion of an additional tax cut on top of the $1.5 trillion for lowering the corporate top tax rate. So the pass-through business income top tax rate reduced from 39 to 25 will cost another almost half a trillion dollars over the decade. All right, so we're at about $2 trillion for the first two provisions of this corporate business tax cut under the House bill. The other biggie here is multinational corporations. Right? This is where apologists, you know, and those who do the bidding of big corporations, which is mostly Congress, claim that the U.S. pays taxes on offshore profits to those countries and must pay taxes on that offshore profits as well to the U.S. It's called the territorial tax arrangement, and they want to abolish the territorial tax. In other words, arrange it so U.S. Corporations, multinational corporations, don't pay anything on their offshore profits. Now, do you really think if they eliminate taxes on offshore profits, that these corporations won't move even more of their U.S. operations offshore? Of course they will. It will destroy jobs, not create jobs. You know, Trump talked about, oh, I'm going to bring jobs back. Well, he's all in favor of this multinational tax break here and the territorial tax idea, and that will cause far more loss and offshoring of jobs than any of his phony public relations events here about bringing jobs back to the U.S. Okay. Well, what are the provisions for the multinational corporations here under the House bill? Well, instead of paying 35% on offshore earnings, they're going to reduce it to 12%. If they bring the money back, you see, this $2.4 trillion offshore, they'll reduce it to 12%. Ah, but that's only for cash held offshore. It's only a 5% rate for other so-called liquid assets held offshore. What you're going to see is a gaming of this arrangement by multinational corporations. What they'll do is convert their cash into nominal liquid asset forms, in other words, non-cash forms that can be converted quickly back to cash, and pay the 5% rate, and then after they pay the 5% rate, they'll move it back to cash. Okay, they'll game the system. They'll only pay 5%. There's also another provision on what's called multinationals must pay 10% on excess profits earned offshore. Well, what do they mean by excess profits? There's no definition. And if it's not part of the definition of excess profits, then there is zero tax on those profits. Okay, so, you know, it's a big shell game going on here. And it's a repeat of the shell game that occurred in 2005 under George W. Bush. This so-called repatriation of the hoarding of cash offshore by multinationals was proposed back in 2005. I've mentioned that before, but it's worth mentioning again. At that time, there was about $700 billion held offshore by multinational corporations, mostly, you know, your tech companies, your big pharma companies, banks, oil and energy, you know, the big guys. And the deal cut was bring this $700 billion back, and you get to pay a tax of only 5.25% instead of 35%. All right, big windfall. Okay, so they brought about half of that back, about $350 billion. And part of the deal in 2005 was the money you bring back, you got to invest in the U.S. Well, they, quote, invested in U.S., but not in creating jobs and real production. What they did was use the money to invest in financial assets, stock markets, used it to buy up their competition, mergers and acquisitions. And that's where it all went. It didn't go into creating jobs and income and wages for the working class and middle class. Well, the same game is being repeated now. You know, if you let them get away with that in 2005, do you think they're not going to do it again? They, meaning the multinationals, corporations? Yes, of course. And yes, they have done it again. And now instead of $700 billion is $2.4 trillion, they admit to. That's not counting what they've stuffed away in their shelters. $2.4 trillion. Okay, repatriated, bring it back, and they'll bring it back not at the 12%, but the 5%. You see, it's the same game all over. And don't you think this is going to be an incentive for them to do it yet again a third time? You know, in 2005, they called it a one-time deal. And now we're seeing it again. And now they're calling it also a one-time deal. And we're going to see it again, of course. All right, so that's at least $500 billion in a tax breaks for these multinational corporations over the decade, even more than that. That's a lowball estimate probably, right? Because the loopholes are not being closed. You know, the inversions loophole for multinationals is pretty much untouched, and other loopholes and you know, any of the attempts to reduce and claim that amount of taxes held offshore, which is really a tax fraud, you see, because by law, the foreign profits tax is supposed to pay that 35%, and of course they haven't, but no one's done anything about it in Congress. They let them get away with it. All right. So the three biggies, reducing the nominal corporate tax rate from 35 to 20%, reducing the pass-through income provision for non-corporate businesses from 39.6 to 25%, and these various repatriation territorial tax provisions for multinational corporations. That alone is $2.5 trillion. $2.5 trillion, just those three big corporate tax cuts. By the way, I forgot to mention that this pass-through business income for non-corporate businesses, most of that tax cut is benefiting the very wealthy, not the mom-and-pop businesses. If mom-and-pop business, small business, not a corporation, makes less than $260,000 a year, which most mom-and-pops do, some of them quite less, they don't get any of the tax cut here on this pass-through provision. It all goes to the very wealthy, the 1%, wealthiest 1% households that are proprietors and S-corps and so forth, you know, get over half of the income, earn over half of the income from non-corporate businesses. So they would get the $250 billion of the $448 billion at least, right? So it really benefits, once again, the very rich. Okay, there's other provisions here in corporate tax cutting in the bill that, you know, are important but not as great as what we've seen. One is a $41 billion reduction as a result of investment tax credits. Businesses will now be able to claim 100% of all their plant and equipment investment in the first year. In other words, there's no amortization going on here. And they can do that for 5 years, five more years. 100%, write everything off. I mean, if you don't need more computers, you know, buy some computers for your cousins and your family interests and so forth, and claim that they're for your proprietorship or your partnership, and write it all off, make the taxpayer pay. There's provisions called business expensing. You know, this is a big loophole area people aren't aware of. Businesses can deduct all kinds of expenses from their tax bill. Individuals can't, workers can't, but they can, and this has been liberalized in certain ways to provide another $50 billion, $5 billion a year. Of course, the infamous carried interest loophole for hedge funds and so forth remains undisturbed, and they can continue paying even less personal income tax rate. Even though they're making billions a year, they don't pay the 39.6. They pay about 23% to start. This is the carried interest loophole. And then there's the corporate alternative minimum tax, you know, the AMT for individuals, and there's an AMT for corporations. In other words, if you take advantage of all the loopholes and so forth to reduce your taxes, you still have to pay something. And that's what the AMT, alternative minimum tax, is about. That's being reduced here. The amount of savings is not certain here. And then there's special treatment for the commercial real estate industry. In other words, Trump's real estate. He's a big real estate industry speculator, property speculator. Well, there are no limits on business expensing and deductions from their tax bill in the commercial real estate industry. And they get another nice tax loophole here where they don't have to pay profits on when they exchange property. Well, what is that? Well, for example, let's take L.A. Commercial commercial real estate interests have cut this deal with L.A. County and city officials, where they're going to build new facilities for the city, new city government facilities, and the city is going to pay for it by simply giving these developers the land and the buildings on which the old city government sat, right in downtown L.A., which is, you know, worth billions and billions, right? That's how they're going to pay for the construction of the new land, the new government center. Well, the value of that land is, you know, billions and billions and billions. But because it's exchanged, it's a property exchange, they won't have to pay. They, the commercial real estate developers, won't have to pay the interest or pay taxes on the profits of the value of that property. You know, that's an example of how this exchanging a property is manipulated by these interests. Okay, so, you know, the biggies are the big three: multinationals, pass-through income, corporate tax rate. But we have, you know, these tens of billions of dollars of additional provisions here for investment credits, business expensing, corporate AMT, carried interest, and the commercial real estate industry. By the way, you know, Trump says throughout all of this that, I'm not benefiting at all from this. Well, that's another one of his many, many lies. In his last release taxes, 2005 or somewhere around there, it showed that Trump paid $35 million as a result of the alternative minimum tax. Well, if the alternative minimum tax goes away, which it will here, you know, that's probably minimum $35 million savings for him, minimum. Who knows what it is today, probably a lot higher savings for him. And then, of course, all these special provisions in the commercial real estate industry, he benefits from as well. You know, he's made a lot of his billions by manipulating the tax system. And it's set up that way. You know, it's not that he earned anything, not that he, you know, created anything. He manipulated the system. And that's how he got wealthy. All right, so that's the corporate side, the corporate business side, $2.6 trillion minimum of tax cuts. Now, if you look at the personal income tax side of all this, the wealthy households, the 1% and others, get another $2 trillion in tax cuts just from three provisions, three measures. So three measures in the corporate tax give you $2.5 trillion, and another $2 trillion from just three measures in this House bill affecting the high-end income earners through the personal income tax. Well, what are these? Well, the House proposes to drop the top tax bracket from 39.6 to 33%. In other words, the cutoff here at 39.6 is folks who earn $466,000 a year, threshold minimum, right? $466,000 a year in new income generated every year, right? And that's gone down to 33%. So, in other words, the 39.6 top rate will now be raised from 466 to 1 million. In other words, 1 million is the bottom threshold to pay the 39.6 rate. So, everybody between 466,000 and 1 million will now have their personal income taxes reduced to 33 from 39.6%. And those who are at 33%, the next bracket will be reduced to 25%. And the middle class, which pays 25%, will continue to pay 25%. So no tax cuts for the middle class from tax bracket consolidation and reduction. And how much will that cost? Well, again, according to the Joint Committee of Taxation of Congress, $1.1 trillion just just from reducing the top tax brackets and consolidating them. $1.1 trillion of the $2 trillion of the three items that we mentioned. Okay, what's the second of these items? The estate tax. The estate tax is currently paid by only 0.2%, 0.2 of 1%. Now, 0.2% of the tax households, taxable households in the U.S., about 130 million of them. Okay. It's going to be extremely liberalized under the House bill. Instead of a 5.5 million exemption, first 5.5 million of your estate you don't pay any tax on per person, for a couple, in other words, they don't. If their estate is worth $10.9 million, they don't pay anything. It goes free to their beneficiaries. Well, that's going to double, you see. Now it's going to be $11 million per person instead of $5.5 million per person. And the estate tax gets repealed altogether at the end of the next decade, 2023, I think. Maybe it's 2027, I'm not sure. Okay, so I think it's 2023, before the end, it gets repealed altogether. Right? How much does that amount to in terms of tax cuts? $172 billion. So we got $1.1 trillion from bracket reduction, and we got another $172 billion from reducing and then eliminating the estate tax. And by the way, the gift tax also, estate tax is paid at the time of death, but the gift tax can be paid at any time. Gift tax has a 10% exemption as well. All right. So the third big element is the alternative minimum tax. And that's a tax in which, as I said before, affects both individuals, and there's a corporate version of this. The individual AMT is designed to make people pay something. And it has been doing that, although it's been growing weaker and weaker in doing that. But it has been doing that to some extent. Okay, 60% of the AMT is paid by households with more than $500,000 a year income. 60%. So, it's the 1% who pays the AMT. And another 20% of that is households who earn between $200,000 and $500,000. So 80% is paid by the wealthiest 1%. Okay? 80% of the AMT. Well, under the House bill, that's abolished. That's ended. Just as the estate tax will be ended, the AMT will end as well. All right. So how much is that in terms of tax cut for the rich? $696 billion over the decade, according again to the Joint Committee on Taxation of Congress. So $1.1 trillion, $172 billion, $696 billion. That's about $2 trillion, isn't it? $2 trillion in just those three provisions in the House bill, reducing personal income taxes on the wealthy. $2.6 trillion, three provisions, reducing corporate taxes, $2.2 trillion, reducing personal income taxes, that's $4.6 trillion. That's the minimum, because I'm not going over all the smaller pieces of measures of tax cutting here in the bill. $4.6 trillion, and they're talking about $1.5 trillion. Well, how are they going to pay for the difference between $1.5 and $4.6 trillion? Okay, that's the issue, right? They got to come up with over $3 trillion in tax hikes. $3 trillion in tax hikes to be left with a budget deficit of $1.5 trillion. Okay, well, here's how they do it, and here's who pays. It's the middle class and the working class. Some people say the middle class is not working class. Some people say working class is middle class. If you just look at income levels, it gets a little confusing. But the working class is clearly, people who are working or unemployed looking for work, earning up to, maybe $120,000 a year in family income, maybe a little higher. We've got a labor force of about 160 million people, and about 115 million, maybe, are what we call non-supervisory production and service workers, in other words, non-managers of any kind, households. And their income, that non-supervisory production workers, their income tops out at about 110 at the very top. So, 120, 130 thousand a year is the working class. And a lot of them are, quote, in the middle class in terms of income levels. And then above that, we've got, middle class who aren't really working class. They may be managers and so forth, single proprietors, et cetera. And then, of course, we have the 1% who are really not working class. They're capitalists. And the middle class, may have elements of capitalism, investments, and so forth. It kind of blends, but who's going to pay for this? Well, it's clearly the middle class and the working class, right, with their overlaps, whatever. How do they pay for it? Well, here's how. One, the House bill eliminates personal exemptions. In other words, this was for a family of four, you get an exemption reduction from your taxable income of $16,600 per year. Right, family of four, reduce your taxable income $16,600. And then there's the second thing called the standard deduction, not the personal exemption, standard deduction, that allows also a kind of a tax credit of sorts off of your taxable adjusted gross income. All right. Currently, that's $13,000. But the bill would raise this to $24,000, right? $24,000 standard deduction increases, which is a positive for the working middle class. But the bill eliminates the personal exemption, $16,600. So they take away $16,600 and they give you $11,000. And the net result is a $5,200 increase in your taxable income. Right? Smoke and mirrors here. Move the money around. Now, if you itemize your taxes, which most people do between the $50,000 and $120,000 annual income, and the higher up you go, the more itemization goes on. If you itemize with this change in the exemption and standard deduction, you're going to get an increase of $7,200 in taxable income. Well, that's all tax hikes, you see. That's tax hikes on the working class and middle class. Your taxable income goes up. Therefore, you have to pay more taxes. And how much is that over a 10-year period? According to the Joint Committee on Taxation, $1.6 trillion. So the smoke and mirrors on the deductions and exemptions raises $1.6 trillion, okay, to help pay that $4.5 trillion of cuts for corporations and the wealthy. Okay, so $1.6 trillion. The other major way is by eliminating itemization in itemized deductions. Eliminating a lot of deductions under this House plan, which also hits the personal income tax for the working class and middle class. Well, what are they? An ending of the state and local tax deduction, $186 billion. Tax filers who itemize can deduct from their federal tax bill the taxes they pay to states and locals that have income taxes, for example, or sales taxes, income taxes. All right, that's a biggie. That's almost $200 billion a year. Now, you get an apologist for business saying, Oh, you know, the state and local taxes paid by people with who are very wealthy, right? Most of it is claimed by the wealthiest 1% households. Well, that's not true. Only 27% of the wealthiest households pay this total state and local tax, income tax deduction. So that deduction goes away, right? Also, the property tax deduction, which you can also claim if you itemize, is capped. A limit is put on that. So part of the funding comes out of the property tax deduction, as well as the state and local tax deduction. Under the House bill, also there's a limit on first mortgages interest. If you put limits on first mortgage interest, that means new homes are going to become even more expensive. Construction will decline, jobs will decline, and people will have to compete more for rents, which apartments, and that means rental prices will rise. Okay, so these are the three big deductions: state and local tax, property tax limits, first mortgage limits. Now, there are credits that are also eliminated here altogether under the House bill. Alternative energy credits, you know, you purchase a electric car or hybrid or put solar panels or wind panels or whatever, that's ended altogether at a cost of $12 billion. Adoption credits, family cost of adoption of kids, you know, who need a home, that's ended under the House bill. That's $4 billion. Education credits take a big whack. This is really an anti-higher education tax bill, no doubt. Before, you could deduct student interest. You could claim lifetime learning tax credit. Both of those are gone. Tuition assistance from your company, up to $5,200 a year. Which was, you know, a tax credit for the company, that's gone, and therefore, you know, there'll be less tuition assistance, and education bonds and savings accounts, interest deduction, that's gone, right? It's all gone. There's only one program left in the whole education credit. That raises somewhere between $65 and $95 billion a year. Medical expenses. You can itemize medical expenses if it's up to or greater than 10% of your adjusted gross income. Folks with big medical problems and medical costs and so forth can deduct part of that from their taxes. $182 billion, that's gone under the House bill. Flexible health savings accounts, you know, where workers put into a fund part of their income, their paycheck, that doesn't get taxed, but they have to use it for health purposes, flexible health savings accounts. This is gone for workers, you see. This is a biggie, by the way, because companies, as I said, can claim a deduction from their taxes as an expense for money they put towards pensions for workers and money they put towards their contribution for employer-provided health insurance, you see. That's $540 billion a year. Almost all of that goes to companies, you see. Over $5 trillion over a decade is the cost of companies expensing pension contributions and health insurance contributions. Well, it's gone for the workers under this. It's not clear to me whether it will be gone for the employers. Probably not. Okay. They claim under this bill that they're improving the situation for the very low income folks because they are providing this standard deduction from $12,000 to $24,000. Also, that they're given a $300 annual expense deduction and raising the child credit by $600. But they're also raising the bottom rate here from 10% to 12%. And they are introducing a new price index which will slow down the amount of money that folks get from the earned income tax credit and other sources. They're using what's called the chained index for inflation, which means inflation, the number of inflation is lower, and therefore they pay less, you see. Okay, so the bottom will get a little bit of a benefit, but it'll be offset by certain provisions. So it's unsure exactly how much the bottom income earners will get. But this is what they do in all these tax bills. You know, they give big breaks for corporations, for the high end earners, and so forth, and they give a little sop and a taste for the very low end to make it look like they're being fair, and then they rape the middle class, they make the middle class pay for the lion's share of the tax cuts on the rich, and so forth. Okay, so that's how you know they pay for the $4.5 trillion, $2 trillion in tax cuts for the very wealthy, paid for by these changes in middle-class exemptions, deductions, itemizations, credits, and so forth. They take it all back, you see, from the middle class, from this itemization and deductions and credits. That's how they pay for the most of this wealthy personal income taxes. Right, $2 trillion for the high end, and they take $3 trillion from the middle class, right? Which leaves them still with about 1.5. Well, that's the deficit. You see, the whole package is $4.5 trillion, and you take $3 trillion from the middle class with these measures, and that leaves you with $1.5 trillion that hits your deficit. And therefore your debt. See, that's the fundamental mechanics and simple arithmetic of this House tax bill. Now, if they really wanted to cut taxes by $4.5 trillion and not raise a penny of tax on the middle class, they could do it through three provisions only. What are they? Well, they could end the long-term capital gains preference rates. You see, if you keep your stocks for more than 1 year, you get a lower rate, and your losses you can deduct from your taxes and so forth, right? Capital income, stock market gets a big break. How much is that, this loophole or this provision of a long-term capital gains lower rate? $1.34 trillion, according to the Joint Committee. All right. Stock transfers at death. If you die and you give your stock and your will to someone else, family member usually, right? It's not taxable. It has nothing to do with the estate tax, you see. If it's stock, it's not the estate tax. Estate tax has to do with other forms of property. So if you ended this stock transfer, no taxation at death, that would bring in another $644 billion over the decade. And then if you did something about business expensing and tax deductions for contributions to pensions and health insurance plans, which, as I said, is $5.4 trillion over the decade, let's say you just reduced that to half, so they could only claim $2.7 trillion instead of $5.4 trillion, guess what? You come up with $4.6 trillion. $1.34 for long-term gains. Stock transfers, $644 billion, $2.7 trillion for eliminating business deductions for pensions and health plan. That's $4.7 trillion. You could pay for all these corporate tax cuts, these three biggies, and the three biggie personal high-end tax cuts for the rich simply by these three measures. And you wouldn't have to take anything from the middle class and the working class. You wouldn't have to reduce their deductions and their itemizations and so forth. You wouldn't have to do that at all. Okay. So now we got this Senate bill that's just taking form. And what are some of the early indicators of what the Senate is proposing? One, they're proposing to delay the corporate tax cut 1 year. That was, this is a reduction from 35% to 20%. That won't hold because as soon as they announced that, the stock market took a plunge, right? Which means the financial markets know that this tax cut is big free money that will flow, a lot of it will flow into stocks, you know, so the stock market reacts negatively to this. You should think of this big tax cut as an offset to the ending of the free money from the central bank, the Federal Reserve, in the form of low interest rates, you see, for 8 years, free money. A lot of it went into the stock markets. And now the Fed's trying to raise rates. I predict they won't raise it much, but it's trying to. And this tax cut comes, not coincidentally, at the same time the Fed's raising rates. In other words, instead of giving free money through the central bank, they'll get their free money now through the tax cut. Okay, so the Senate's going to delay tax cut 1 year, cleaning up some of the worst provisions. In other words, instead of raising the bottom personal rate from 10 to 12%, that's not there in the Senate bill. The Senate has taken out the ending in the House bill of medical expense deductions and first mortgage limits and adoption credits, right? Although it's kept the provision that you'll no longer be able to claim second loans, home loans, lines of credit, home equity loans, and so forth. They propose to reduce the top personal rate from 39.6 to 38.5, about a 1%. But what's called the bubble rate, some very, very rich sometimes pay 45.6%. The bubble rate is gone, you see. So they're shifting the tax cut to the super, super rich here and only giving a 17% windfall in reducing to 38.5, right? They're going to keep the state and local tax elimination, deduction elimination, same as the House, and the property tax elimination, same as the House. Biggies, biggies. That's really going to hit the middle class hard, right? And they will restore the $2,500 student loan interest. They keep the estate tax liberalization at $11 million per person, but don't include repealing it altogether in 2023. Okay, so they're tweaking this thing around. No major, major changes, as I see it. And, you know, they've yet to address this thing of the income pass-through and all the other biggies there. But we'll see. The debate's just starting. It's hard to see. These are just proposals, not decisions by the Senate, right? So what's going to happen over time here? What we see in this bill is tax cuts on the middle class continue to grow over time. And, tax hikes on the middle class grow over time. Whatever tax cuts there are for the middle class kind of sunset, like the $300 provision. And tax break for corporations and the 1% wealthiest accelerate over time. So over time, it gets worse and worse, you see. 25% of the population will see an income tax hike, according to Tax Policy Center, and some of them up to 40%. Right? The system will be gamed and abused by multinational corporations. The pass-through provision will be gamed and abused as well. And this is all what's going on in the latest version of neoliberal tax reform. No, nothing to do with reform. It's more of the same. It's more big cuts, $4.5 trillion for the rich, paid for $3 trillion by the middle class, with a $1.5 trillion deficit, which they will fund by cutting social programs.